so strong. Humans are programmed to survive. There is no right or wrong way to be. You have to figure out what works for you.
Welcome to another episode of my Reimagining Health and Fitness podcast, where we look at health and fitness from all different perspectives and ask why a lot, and try and understand the fundamental structure and ideas behind why we do what we do, and look at methods to implement change and to get to your goals in an easy way. I think health and fitness should be a byproduct of your lifestyle, and you shouldn't miss out anything to get there. Today, I'm going to be talking about leaving work healthier every day. A lot of us, we spend more time at work than we do at home, than we do with our family or friends. And my idea is to create work as this sort of health. This doesn't mean cutting everything out and being really boring at work, but there are certain things we can do. And to improve our life and our health at work, it's about breaking old habits and setting some new ones that will support your health and get you to whatever your goals are. Imagine a year from now what your body would look like, or what you would feel like, what your fitness would be like if you left work a little bit healthier every day. We all have very different work environments, so a lot of what I say may not apply to you, so you've got to kind of reimagine it in your environment. So we'll talk about some little techniques you can implement without disrupting your workspace or your coworkers. You can still make a profound difference. I go to a lot of companies and I discuss their setups, their office setups, so they can create better work environments. And I must say, it does work better when I've spoken to a whole department or a whole company, because then they can implement the change together. You can do it individually. There's a reason why, which we'll get into later, why it's better to do it as a group. We'll not only talk about some of these techniques, but also how did we end up with the work environments that we have? And why do we all have this agreement to keep doing it, when now we know that we're not very healthy at work? Just take sitting alone. We know it's bad for us, but yet we still go every day and we sit for hours and hours and hours. Yeah, we're doing little adjustments and there's more knowledge about it. People are getting standing desks and things like that. But there's a massive social consciousness and an agreement that when you sit down, that equals focus. And when you're doing something different, it doesn't equal focus. As humans, we have what I like to call the boiling frog syndrome. I'm referring to that experiment where if you put a frog in boiling water, it'll jump out. But if you put it in cold water and then slowly increase the temperature until the water's boiling, the frog stays in. And we're sort of, you know, we're more the latter, where our bodies are slowly going into dysfunction and slowly getting less and less healthy. We are so preoccupied with what's going on in this moment, not really paying much attention to how we're going to feel later, tomorrow, in 10, 20, 30 years, you know, when we're 70, 80, 90 years old. There's a lot we can do now that's going to give us a better quality of life when we age. But very few of us live life with that in mind. That's why I came up with this description of humans. We are fear-based, instinctual animals focused on immediate gratification. I want to leave you with some ideas and some thoughts and some tools that you can apply now that's going to positively affect the quality of life when you're in your 70s, 80s, 90s or older. Another question we can discuss is, what is normal or healthy right now? So many people are telling us, you know, their ideas about it. And yeah, we know a lot about the function of the body, and through experiments and science and trial and error, we have found a lot of, you know, good information about what makes the body thrive and healthy. But there's still a lot of theory, there's a lot of ideas. Even with science, which, you know, I base a lot of my ideas and theories on, all it's giving us is probabilities. You can't actually replicate an experiment exactly the same. It's very, very difficult, especially with fitness and nutrition, because there are so many variables. Just the fact that our own chemistry is different from everyone else. So an experiment is, we've repeated it as best we can, and we had a similar outcome or the same outcome, and it's probably will have the same outcome on you. So you got to always take it with, you know, that in mind. So it doesn't really give us absolutes. And this is not just my idea. This is, you know, I just listened to Dr. Ellen Langer from Harvard, a Harvard researcher, and that this is her description, how she described scientific testing. Okay, so how did we get in this mess in the first place? I like to break into two main factors, which is our DNA programming, and then there's our social agreement, or societal norms. Let's look at three major events in history that were big contributors to our health. You know, back to the invention of agriculture, leading to the agricultural revolution, the industrial revolution, the history of sitting and chairs, and then finally coming to what we're in now, which is the scientific revolution. Pre-agriculture, we were, to the best of our knowledge, hunters and gatherers. So our day probably consisted of going out, gathering vegetables and, you know, picking plants and maybe catching small animals or maybe feeding on bigger animals that maybe another animal had caught or something, and then bringing it back and preparing the food and probably hanging out the rest of the day. You know, unless there was some danger and we had to deal with that danger, or we had to build a new shelter or relocate to a new environment or fight something off, we were not fixed in one location. And we, you know, according to a lot of anthropologists, we probably roamed around to different locations. And this all changed after the invention of agriculture. You know, and a couple of major things to point out here is that, one, we stayed in one location now because we had a crop and we had to look after that crop and protect that crop and water the crop and plow the fields. And so we built our homes around the crops so we could be close to them. Another interesting thing, you know, when anthropologists or archaeologists excavate humans pre and post agriculture, there was a lot more skeletal injury post agriculture, you know, because we suddenly were doing things that our bodies couldn't evolutionarily prepare for. You know, for example, we're probably carrying water or digging in the fields. And so there's a lot more skeletal injuries post-agriculture. When we started to gain control of the plants we grew to eat, not only was there a lot less variety, but we're instinctually programmed to want foods with the most caloric density, the most energy. So the highest in fat, or the highest in sugars, or salt, because our body can gain more from that. You know, and thinking just in terms of our survival, our programming for survival, these are the foods that would give us the most energy. So naturally, we're attracted to them. So what farmers would do is if they had a peach that was very sweet, they would use the seeds from that peach and grow it. So eventually, they were weeding out all the bitter foods. And now most societies, especially Western societies, don't really have a taste for bitter foods or sulfur foods like onions and garlic, or bitter foods like dark green vegetables or a lot of sour foods. This is mainly due to us adapting our environment, what's available to us, to our taste, not looking at, okay, what's the healthiest or best for us. And finally, one thing to point out with agricultural revolution, there was a big change, is now we're all living around the farm, so there's more of us in one location, so the spread of disease increased now. I've heard it's something like 90% of the foods we eat now have been adapted through agriculture. So when you talk about what's in our natural diet, that's very hard to answer, because nearly all the plants have been manipulated in some way. Another interesting thing is if you think about natural selection, you know, for each species, the strongest offsprings are going to survive. Let's take a chicken, for example. If there's a chicken that's running around and very fast, very strong, they're going to be around longer to have more offsprings. So there's going to be more offsprings of chickens that are stronger. And the ones that are not so strong and fast and agile, they're going to get killed off or die younger. And so they won't reproduce as much. So eventually, over millennia, the stronger chickens are going to be available. Now, what's happened with our farming is that we want the slower and fatter animals. So not the ones that would be selected through evolution, but the ones that we can catch and control easily. Slow, fat animals are way easier for us to catch than our fast, strong ones. Now, jumping to the Industrial Revolution, a few interesting things happened here. We began to work as a group on one product. So where previously someone's work wasn't dependent on me doing my work, for example, if my job was to cut down trees and make them into planks for boats, the person making the boat was okay to wait, you know, however long it's going to take me to get enough wood to do that. You know, a few days, weeks, months, whatever it was. He wasn't immediately dependent on me completing my job. He might even be able to start, you know, with one part of the boat until I get more wood, and then he's going to continue. But with the Industrial Revolution and factories, now the person working down the line from me is immediately dependent on what I do. So if I don't pull my lever and it doesn't affect the product right away, George, sitting down the end, he can't do his job. So we had to all be coordinated in one location and show up at the same time. And so we had to create timetables. We had to all agree now that everyone was going to show up at work at a certain time and everyone was going to finish at a certain time. And going back one step further, we all had to agree on time. Where if you think back, you know, a few thousand years, we relied more on the sun. You know, daylight and night, and we could do things in daylight, and it was not so easy at night to do things. But now, we all have to show up at the same time, so we need an agreement of time. When we did get clocks and measure time, not every village or town had the same time. And so we couldn't put a train in to leave the platform, you know, in one location at 2 p.m. and then arrive at 5 p.m. the other location if 5 p.m. wasn't the same as the 5 p.m. at the location that the train departed from. Hence, everyone agreed that, okay, Greenwich Mean Time is now the actual time and everyone relies on that clock. But probably most importantly, what happened during the Industrial Revolution is we all started to sit a lot more. With the help of some of my trainers, we tried to look up the history of the chair. And, you know, what we found is that there are recordings of the times of Egyptian time. There were chairs there. But it didn't become popular until royalty started to sit in chairs as a show of power. And then during the Industrial Revolution, everyone sat at factories and also started to sit in schools, the people who were being trained to work in factories. And so sitting became the norm. And then we brought chairs into our homes and things like that. And still today, sitting is the predominantly agreed upon posture to show that you're working hard and focused. If I walk into the office and my employee is sitting at the desk looking at his computer, I'm like, oh, he's working. If I come into my office and he's got the computer and he's lying on the floor, I would probably automatically associate that with he's probably not working very hard. This is where it became part of the social norm or collective consciousness. And finally, the scientific revolution, which we're currently in, is making things easier and easier for us with the introduction of robots and things like that. So we're not challenged as much. We're not challenged as much physically, and we're not challenged as much mentally. We have computers to do a lot of our mental tasks. And this is why exercise and creating a healthy environment at work is more important now than ever. Why I said before it's easier to look at making healthy changes throughout your whole company at once is because of this idea that we're a herding community. And that's part of our survival instinct. We are safer in a group, in a tribe. And like chimpanzees, we are attracted to someone who can protect us or look after us, the alpha. I think that kind of translates in our current society to someone who's very wealthy or powerful or a celebrity. And so we want to be that person, or we want to be associated with that person. But what we don't want is to get kicked out of the tribe. We don't want to be different from the tribe or break status quo or rock the boat, because then we'll be alienated. And if we're alienated, we'll be on our own, and on our own, it's not safe. Whether perceived or real, in our current society, it's more perceived. But back during our hunter and gathering days, it was real. I'm leaving my tribe. Even if I was going hunting for the day, I'm alone, it's dangerous. I'm with the tribe, I'm safer together. Just a side note, this is theorized that that's why we, as a species of human, outlived other species, like Neanderthal, because we could cooperate as a group. Yuval Harari talks about this in his book Sapiens. And if you haven't read it, go out and read that book. I think it should be required reading for everybody. So how does this apply to our work environment? Well, if I only start doing something different, like I'm going to put my knee up on my chair so I'm stretching my hip flexor, and everyone else in the office is still sitting down in their chair, I'm the odd one out. Now, their norm is threatened. That is why I think it's hard for us to accept someone doing something differently or people that are different from us. If I can get in and talk to the whole office and say, hey, it's okay to put your knee up on the chair, then when George down in cubicle number one is putting his knee up on the chair, I understand why he's doing it. These are some of the major factors I feel contribute to our social agreement of sitting and work environment. You know, it is changing, it is breaking apart, and you do want to be a disruptor. I don't think you need to go in and change everything and get rid of your desk and chair and start laying on the floor or sitting in a deep squat. But at least now it's being discussed that, hey, maybe there are other options. Standing desks are getting more and more popular. It's not strange anymore for someone to want a standing desk. And the other major factor is, I think, our DNA programming, which I speak about all the time because I think it's the foundation of everything we do, is this instinctual programming. It affects very much why we eat, what we eat, how much we eat, when we eat. I think it's always worth touching on this again because I think it's such an important topic. We have these instincts for survival, and then we have emotions to support them. I have a negative emotion indicating something is possibly dangerous or wrong and I should think about maybe not doing it again. Or I get a positive one and I should go, oh, maybe I want to repeat that. From my point of view, I think emotions are just warning signals and we should look at them objectively. But let's take stress, for example, which is often a common feeling during work, stress or anxiety, which is an uncomfortable feeling for us. And so we don't want to have this feeling, so we want to mask it. And we know that eating fatty foods, sugary foods, give us a positive emotional response. And so we can use them to mask these negative feelings. So what we really need to do is master the understanding of how our brains are functioning and get what people call mindfulness. So we aren't just being puppeted by these feelings and emotions, but we're understanding them and making decisions independently from them. What I recommend to my clients, if you find yourself snacking a lot throughout the day or looking forward to these meals as like a reprieve, you're not dealing with your emotional state, your stress or anxiety, whatever it is, loneliness, it can be anything. Going for a snack or hunger can be a really good indicator that something else is going on. And so you want to create techniques of how to deal with stress that don't involve food. We also now eat on this timetable, breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, afternoon snack, due to the timetable created in the Industrial Revolution. I mean, where else does it come from that we need to eat these meals a day? Apart from, we want you to have energy before you come to work. We're going to all have a break so we can eat and you can have energy later on in the day. And then when you get home, let's have dinner. You know, in a lot of cultures, pre-Industrial Revolution, people only ate one meal a day at night. We're not really designed to be constantly fed, I don't think. I think that, you know, when this idea that we should eat often throughout the day to keep blood sugar balanced, I think it's the wrong way to look at it. I think if we eat less and don't eat things that spike your blood sugar, your energy is going to be much more constant. Our DNA is also programmed from the scarcity perspective. We don't know when we're going to get our next meal, etc. And so our bodies designed a very clever way to store this energy. The problem is we don't live in that environment anymore. I heard recently that more people are dying from obesity than they are from starvation now. So an abundance of food with a scarcity programming is the cause of so much of our disease and poor health. If you look at the population as a whole, most people only gain 1 to 2 pounds every year. But they do it year after year after year. So 10, 20, 30 years down the road, and you end up 40 pounds heavier. And now it's not so easy to get it off. The trend does also show that when you get into your 70s, 80s, that you start to lose weight and you get lean again. Okay, so now we know why we end up in these interesting postures and positions we get our body into. But what happens? Why is it bad? When you're in one position for an extended period of time, neurologically, your muscles are getting shut down. Also, the seated position puts some muscles into a shortened position, like the psoas and other hip flexors. We're sitting on our glute muscle, and there's a bone, the ischial tuberosity is sticking into that muscle, and their constant pressure is turning that muscle off. And so that muscle isn't getting neurologically stimulated, and it's becoming dormant. Also, when we're in static positions, our joints become restricted, and we can't move them as much. We set our habits, you know, when we start our careers, and we usually repeat the same habits for the rest of our lives, which is often sitting with our reaching out into a computer, so our arms are rolled forward and shoulders kind of come forward, and eventually we start to lose the ability to move in different positions. Now let's talk about what to do to get healthier every day, to leave work healthier every day, knowing these social agreements are just made up, and the other factor is a DNA programming or our instincts. You can start from a clean slate. So wipe everything we did in the past off the table. Now what's possible? Now what can we do? What can we create? What environments can we create at work? Or what small changes can we implement to make a big difference? So how do you make work your health zone? Let's start with nutrition. What I would recommend, start eating really healthy at work and reducing the amount you eat at work, and then socially you can be a little more relaxed. There are so many social engagement or work functions that get put into our schedule throughout the week. We end up consuming a lot at these events, and then we consume a lot when we're at work or throughout our day, and often it's so mindless too. We've also collapsed the idea of energy from food versus nutrition from food. And as I always mention, I think we should look at nutrition on a daily basis and energy on a weekly basis. I think also a lot of us mix up the idea of blood sugar crashes with energy deficit. If I eat some sugars or carbohydrates or even some protein on its own, that's going to spike my blood sugar. And then it's going to crash, and that's going to make me feel tired. And my body's going to send me signals to try and make me eat something to gain that energy back, to bring my blood sugar back up. And it may be a little bit different from everybody, but it could be like a headache or a sleepy feeling or even an emotion like frustration or anger or upset. The hangry, that's more associated with blood sugar change than it is with energy deficit. Most people typically have enough energy stored in their body to have them last days, weeks, months, years even. Something else that's interesting is that this discussion of ketosis is becoming more popular, and the body uses fat as energy as opposed to sugar as energy. You can get into ketosis by increasing the amount of fat you eat per meal and by eating less, by going into a fasted state. So we're finding it's actually healthier to eat less and to have breaks without food. You know, some of you may have heard of intermittent fasting. That kind of that applies this that same concept. So at work, think of nutrition as feeding your cells, as flushing your body with nutrition. Often nutrition is more about what you remove than what you add. So if you remove these irritants, things like a lot of people have sweet things in the afternoon because it raises their blood sugar, they think it gives them energy. Also, coffee in the morning kind of spikes your adrenaline, amps you up, gets you going for the day. Your body then now becomes dependent on that. So if you remove these stimulants and irritants, the body's going to actually start to balance out and function better. The problem is when you eat less, your body's going to start sending you these really powerful signals to get you to eat. And you got to be mindful of these so you know what's real and not real. Are you really going to run out of energy? Do you not have enough stored energy, enough fat on your body to last you throughout the day? For most of us, the answer is, I have enough energy to get through the day. And so you can condition yourself to be more efficient at metabolizing fat than relying on sugars. I work a lot with endurance athletes, and I did it myself where I started eating less or exercising in a fasted state. And it took me a while, but my body adapted to become efficient at metabolizing fat. And I stopped having these feelings of like the blood sugar crashes, where I had these complete energy meltdowns while I was exercising. So get to know your signals and don't let them control you. A good way to figure this out is just to ask yourself, why am I eating when I'm eating? Am I hungry? If so, how do I know I'm hungry? What are those signals? Am I really hungry? When was the last time I ate? When am I going to eat? Am I eating just because it's mealtime? Have I been conditioned to this timetable? Or is it something else? Is it because I'm stressed and I'm trying to cover that emotion or mask it? Is it because I'm bored? Have I had a long day and I need a little break? I know that's what happened to me when I tried fasting at work, is that I realized that my meal breaks or my snacks were little reprieves for me in my day. I got a little break. I got to change my focus a little bit. And so when I didn't have those, it became harder to get through my day. So start to ask yourself, why am I eating when I'm eating? And you might find that you don't actually need to eat so much. You don't need to consume so much food, especially if you're going to be going out some that night or later in the week, or you're going to have a big weekend, or you want to save your caloric intake for when you're with your family. For me right now, I am very social on the weekends. I go out a lot with my friends and I go to restaurants and have some drinks. I consume a lot of calories. So come Monday morning, I don't really eat very much. Even Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, often throughout the whole week, I'm not eating much. I have sometimes I won't have breakfast or I won't have lunch or I'll have just dinner, and I kind of mix it up, and I'm getting very in tune with what my body needs, and I'm not really dependent on these blood sugar spikes anymore, so I maintain energy throughout the day, independent from what I'm eating. Think about eating less at work, eating really healthy at work, and then save all the fun stuff for when you're being social. Now, let's talk about the positions we get our bodies into, which is predominantly sitting. It's hard to describe a lot of these stretches and positions they get into, but if you go to my website at paulmvincent.com, I have photos of them there, or on my Instagram I post some of these, which is Paul M. Vincent. But we can still talk about why this is important. As I mentioned earlier, our body gets into these static positions and joint restriction, so we want to do the opposite. We want to create more space in the joint or more flexibility so the body can function better. One of the largest contributors to aging is a lack of flexibility, lack of joint range of motion, and that stops us from being mobile and getting around. But if we can stay more active and more flexible throughout the day, our bodies will function longer. And this you can make really simple. You can choose a few positions to get into or stretches you can get into and work on them each day. And then by the end of the year, that joint is going to be functioning better. The other thing about having more flexibility in your joints is you can work out better. Think about if I got really tight shoulders and I'm trying to do a military press, I'm trying to push a weight over my head. I'm not only pushing that weight, it's that weight times the restriction in my shoulder. And so if I can get more flexible, I can more efficiently lift more weight and have a better outcome. So I can use my time at work to work on this flexibility. And just choose a couple of them. Like I would choose hip hinging. So that's in your hip. You want to separate the upper torso from the legs. And so you bend with as straight legs as possible and get your back as flat as possible. And so you can do this by leaning your forearms on the desk so you can still type or read your emails or even be on the phone. But you're in this lengthening position. You're stretching your hamstrings and getting the ischial tuberosity to be able to tilt, the pelvis to be able to tilt more. Another important one is lengthening your hip flexors. And you can do this by putting one knee up on the chair or tucking your foot under your chair so your hip flexors are lengthened. You can get a yoga block and kneel down or kneel on one knee and tilt your pelvis and push it forward and contract your glute. So it's lengthening the hip flexor. You also want to stimulate the muscles. You don't want them to be still. So you can just challenge them neurologically. It doesn't have to be a big exercise where you're in the gym and you're sweating and pushing as hard as you can. But if you just stand on one leg, the body has to balance. And so that's being stimulated. You can do like toe raises or little squats or just contracting muscles and just keep them active. Most importantly, you don't want to be static. You want to move at least every hour. I try and move position every 20 minutes. And when you're in the stretch, in the flexible position where you're trying to lengthen tissue, you don't have to be really aggressive with it. It's not like you're in a yoga class trying to push as hard as you can, but you just go to the first point of resistance where you're just feeling that stretch and just hang out there. And you'll see day after day, if you do that, you'll become more and more flexible. You'll get more movement, and you don't have to be aggressive about it. Another way you could make work your health zone is with mindfulness, because why this is important, if what we're doing now, we get stressful and we go to food to relieve us of that stress. But if you get mindful, you can overcome it and you can put little practices into place. You want to develop a few healthy habits so you become mindful and you're not just being puppeted by these instincts and emotion. You're less likely to go to food to cover them up. One good technique to gain control of the mind is meditation. And you can do, you know, quiet meditations at home, or you can take breaks in the day at work and meditate. You can even do like 1 or 2 minute meditations where you just put an object in front of you and you just focus on that object without thinking about it at all. And this will give your mind a little bit of a break. Dr. Ellen Langer distinguishes between mindfulness and mindlessness. Mindfulness is being in a state of not knowing. So you're in a state of learning. And mindlessness is just, you feel like you know everything. So you become numb to it. And so you want to stay mindful, taking on that you might not know everything about this subject or what you're doing. Another good way to get energy is through breath work. You may have heard of Wim Hof, who does this breathing, which is based on Tummo breathing that the monks used to do in Tibet. And it's this heavy breathing, and that stimulates the body and creates energy. So instead of going to food for energy, you can actually go to breath work for energy. And a final point I'll make for energy is sleep. The amount you sleep is obviously very important, but what I think is more important is getting up at the same time consistently. And if you follow Ayurvedic philosophies, they say to get up before 6 a.m. because that's when your body has the most energy. And if you get up after 6 a.m., your body's in a different phase or different cycle and you can't get so alert. If you end up staying up too late, don't adjust your alarm to sleep as much as possible. Still get up at the same time, but that next night, go to bed earlier to make up the sleep. But being consistent with the time you go to bed, and especially the time you wake up, we go through different cycles or circadian rhythms, and hormones are released at different times of the day. And so it's important to be consistent with these cycles. And a lot of them dependent on when you wake up and when you go to sleep. I think just by being aware of all this we just discussed immediately gives you some kind of power over it. Now you know the veil has been lifted, you can now do something about it. I hope this has given you some ideas of how to leave work healthier every day, and I would love to hear from you guys. Hit me up on my Instagram or through my website. I would love to get ideas, feedback, or just your thoughts on it. Play with some of this, make small changes, small adaptations, see what works for you, see what doesn't work, and know there's a difference between if you make a change, the body sometimes has to adapt, so you might not get the desired effect instantly. So just know that you might have to give it some time so the body can adapt, the body can be more efficient. And we're excellent at adapting to new circumstances and new situations. But always remember, there is no right or wrong way to do it. It's all just trial and error and having fun. And being healthy is all about getting out and living the life you love. You can take on anything that comes your way. You want to have the fitness to take on anything and to live a long time and live a full and healthy life. That's what it's about. You know, the look is also important because that gives you confidence, and you want to have confidence. So the point of being healthy is so you can really get out there and have fun and really live life and take it on. It might surprise you what you can adapt in your body in a year with these very small changes.